Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Ira Shapiro, an international trade lawyer in Washington, D.C., who spent 12 years working in senior positions in the United States Senate, playing important roles in implementing the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, the Senate Code of Ethics, and completing the Metro Rail system. During the Clinton administration, he served as the leading U.S. trade negotiator, ultimately earning the rank of ambassador. His new book is The Last Great Senate, Courage and Statesmanship in Times of Crisis. Welcome to Background Briefing, Ira Shapiro.
Thank you, Ian. It's good to be with you.
And your book begins with Evan Bayh, the senator from Indiana, who recently quit, saying there's too much partisanship and not enough progress in the United States Senate. And then more recently, of course, Senator Richard Lugar, highly regarded moderate senator from Indiana, was defeated in the primary by a Tea Party candidate. So it feels like that's a 1-2 punch, isn't it, Ira?
Well, yes, it is, Ian, and it's a continuation of the downward spiral that has marked the Senate for about 20 years. I call it the hyper-partisan Senate, and it's almost unrecognizable to those of us who grew up with the Senate of the 60s and the 70s, which is the Senate I write about, the Senate of Mike Mansfield and Ted Kennedy, Jacob Javits, Howard Baker, Robert Dole. These were people who were identifiably Democrats or Republicans, but they were basically national figures who found a way to work together without partisan considerations. And we've lost that, and Murdoch's election over Lugar was a good example of it. Murdoch said when he ran, "The problem is the Republicans in Washington are compromising too much." He noticed something that nobody else has noticed.
Well, it is a pretty sad state of affairs when another moderate senator on the Republican side, Kay Bailey Hutchison, has just been replaced in Texas by another Tea Party ideologue who again feels that his mission in Washington is to essentially shut down the Senate, to block, not to compromise. This is the new mantra that we're hearing on the stump out there in this election year from the Tea Party. And frankly, it's a very troubling and rather strange throwback in many ways to totalitarianism, where the object of radical groups like the communists or the Nazis, for example, in hijacking the political process is to create gridlock, to bring the government down. Now, I'm not suggesting the Tea Party is in any way comparable to the communists and the Nazis, but the tactic is similar.
Well, I think that I'm hopeful that the election will also produce some people who recognize that you don't accomplish things in politics without an ability to compromise. If you look at Angus King, who's an independent running in Maine, or Heather Wilson, who is a moderate Republican trying to run in New Mexico, you can see people who have had accomplishments, either as governor in King's case or legislatively in Wilson's case, but people who know how potentially to be senators. I sort of adhere to Alan Simpson's view. Senator Simpson, former Senator Simpson, recently said, if you don't know how to compromise, you ought to find another line of work because politics demands it. The people that know in both parties, the people that know how politics demand compromise and how the government works has to overcome these Tea Party people and Jim DeMint from South Carolina and people like that. And unfortunately, they haven't been doing it enough. The Republicans have been too solidly unified against Barack Obama to do anything in a less than partisan way.
Well, their leader in the Senate, Mitch McConnell, after the 2010 elections, vowed that his number one priority was to get rid of Barack Obama. And it's worth noting that one of the Tea Party senators has just been given a slot at the Republican convention to speak, Rand Paul, the new senator from Kentucky. So,
I agree with you. I find Senator McConnell to be a very effective Republican leader, but not a Senate leader of the sort that we used to have. Senate leaders understood that, in John McCain's old words, it's country first. You're not just there as a partisan. When Barack Obama became president and came into office at a time of absolute national economic crisis, he was entitled to expect some cooperation from the Republican minority. Presumably, we come together in times of crisis. And thanks to Mitch McConnell, we didn't.
Again, I'm speaking with Ira Shapiro, who spent 12 years working in senior positions in the United States Senate. His new book is The Last Great Senate, Courage and Statesmanship in Times of Crisis. And you worked in those 12 years in the United States Senate, Ira Shapiro, with or for Senators Gaylord Nelson, Abraham Ribicoff, Thomas Eagleton, Robert Byrd, and Jay Rockefeller. I recall, well, a year or so before his death, Teddy Kennedy gave an interview to NPR where he was asked about, since Teddy Kennedy had a pretty long tenure in the U.S. Senate, he was asked about what changes he had noticed over the years and what was the most profound change in the United States Senate. And without missing a beat, Teddy Kennedy said money. He said, you know, we used to work in the U.S. Senate. We used to show up on Monday and leave on Friday. He said, now, because of the need to raise money, we basically show up on Tuesday night, work Wednesday and Thursday, and then are off for the next few days over the weekend campaigning for money. So it's not, money has apparently created such a system where the senators are basically supplicants to wealthy donors, and they're not doing the people's business.
Well, I think the money, the spiral of money by which senators are now looking to raise $15, $20, $30 million for their race, I think it's a terribly corrupting situation. And it also, even if one were to say that since they're vacuuming up money wherever they can, it's not corruption, it is, in fact, taking a huge amount of the time they used to spend together as legislators. So Ted Kennedy is absolutely right about that. I would couple with that, though, a conscious strategy that has been followed by recent Republican leaders to essentially lead the minority in a party line way, a hyper-partisan way, rather than come up with the kind of cooperation and principled compromise in the national interest that characterized the Senate when it worked. Ted Kennedy is a good example, of course. He was a great senator. Somehow managed to combine very strong convictions with an ability to compromise and to be tolerant of other people's views. We don't see that enough today.
Well, didn't he forge a very close friendship with Orrin Hatch, the conservative senator from Utah?
No, he did. He did. Orrin Hatch started out as, you know, the apostle of the new right of the late 1970s, but over time he became a legislator who was able to do things with Senator Kennedy and others.
Well, in your book, The Last Great Senate, Courage and Statesmanship in Times of Crisis, Ira Shapiro, you talk about how much work was done in, and of course, the 1978 debate over the United States officially recognizing the People's Republic of China while keeping its pledge to Taiwan. That is described along with the Senate saving New York City from bankruptcy, establishing a relation with China, which I just mentioned, and the Panama Canal Treaty, and government oversight with the establishment of the inspector generals in every federal agency, and of course the Senate debated the Camp David deal between Menachem Begin and Anwar Sadat. And it seemed as though they also, in their role of oversight in terms of nominations, nominees got judged on their merits irrespective of partisan politics. So we have a situation now, of course, where Mitt Romney is running for president. And who has he chosen for his person in charge of his judicial appointments, if he's to become president.
Right, none bringing other... us back to Robert Bork in 1987,
exactly.
That confirmation fight.
Right.
No, I think, Ian, I think you're exactly right. And I was going to say that one of the things the book lays out in the narrative, a series of really major issues that the Senate stepped up to one after another and did things like the Panama Canal treaties, where people really took personal political risks to do things that were right for the country. Howard Baker, the Republican leader then, wanted to run for president, and his staff said, Senator, you can never run for president in the Republican part, not get the Republican nomination if you support these treaties. And yet he supported the treaties. He took the lead on them, because they were in the national interest. And you saw people one after another stepping forward and doing things because that's what they were there for. They weren't there to obstruct, and they weren't there to paralyze the body. And right now, the term that often gets used that we've all heard is the permanent campaign. It used to be campaigns stopped, and people then started governing and making the deals needed to get things done. Now, the campaign never ends, and so there's just positioning for the next election.
Well, you mentioned, Ira Shapiro, obstruct, which, of course, leads one to ask about the filibuster. And, of course, our notion of the filibuster comes from the classic movie Mr. Smith Goes to Washington. But somehow or other, the Senate's managed to come up with a painless filibuster where they don't actually have to speak for hours on end, where they all have to do is sort of indicate that they don't want cloture. I mean, it's an amazingly easy mechanism, and of course it's been used essentially constantly. So it's made the government by the majority meaningless.
No, that's right. We used to have the Mr. Smith Goes to Washington type filibusters. Filibusters were relatively rare, they were serious, and people actually had to get on the Senate floor, hold the Senate floor, and demonstrate how strong their opposition to it was. Now we have a situation where people just sort of, as you've indicated, they basically threaten to withhold their support, and withhold unanimous consent, and threaten to filibuster. And they use the calendar in a way as an ally. So if they just register an objection, the majority leader feels the need to go on to the next piece of work. I think that they should have been challenged on these things. I think the Republicans should have been required. If they wanted a filibuster, they should hold the floor and they should have their feet put to the fire.
So what explains that? I mean, what's wrong with Harry Reid? I don't understand why, because, you know, it basically led to gridlock. I mean, you've got a very partisan Republican House, and you've got Mitch McConnell vowing to bring down the president. So why not at least have one of the legislative branches function?
Well, I think that he basically has found a situation where there's too much on the agenda, and he's trying to find things that he can move ahead on and not bog the Senate down endlessly. But from my standpoint, the Senate rules are being used and abused in a way that, A, they ought to be changed, but B, until they're changed, people ought to be forced, to take action and hold the floor if they want to filibuster things. So I don't agree with the way he's handled it.
So what is your sense then of what will happen or what is needed to happen to, because to some extent in your book, The Last Great Senate, Courage and Statesmanship in the Time of Crisis, you sort of say the fault is not with the Senate, but in the country itself.
Well, not entirely. I think, I'm not sure I said that.
Sorry. Well,
a lot of the politics of the country have changed somewhat, but I still believe that it's incumbent on the senators to rise above the vitriolic political culture. They're being sent to Washington, most of them, not all of them, but most of them are being sent to Washington to try to reconcile our differences, not just reflect them or inflame them.
Well, I suppose, though, what has changed in the period when you were in the Senate and when and what you've written about, the last great Senate, that since then there's been increase in voter apathy. Cable news with this 24-hour cycle where constant process stories are churned out, examining the small print of trivial issues on a daily basis. And then you've got, what we talked about earlier with Teddy Kennedy, the extraordinary influx of money, and now with Citizens United, unlimited money.
Yeah.
And then the other factor, I guess, is the Karl Rove types, these political consultants and people like Grover Norquist, who in many ways appear to be more powerful than the senators. I mean, he certainly got a lot of them intimidated.
No question. And there's no question that everything, almost everything, has changed since the era that I wrote about in the 60s and the 70s. And it's much easier to be pessimistic than optimistic because of those changes. But that's one of the reasons I put it really back on the senators to rise above this, because I don't think the country can wait until we fix the campaign financing problem or wait for the 24-hour media to change. I think if you go back to, let's think about recently, if you went back to the beginning of 2009, if the Republicans had reached back when Barack Obama reached out to them, I think we would have had a stronger and earlier economic recovery. I think we would have had some recognition, or could have had some recognition, that the health care legislation really reflects both Democratic and Republican ideas. So I think there are a lot of things that I put on the senators and the Senate. We can't wait for the political culture to change itself totally.
Well, I thank you very much for joining us here today, Ira Shapiro, and for sharing your book, The Last Great Senate, Courage and Statesmanship in a Time of Crisis.
Well, thank you for having me, and I really appreciate it.
Again, I've been speaking with Ira Shapiro, an international trade lawyer in Washington, D.C., who spent 12 years working in senior positions in the United States Senate, playing important roles in implementing the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, the Senate Code of Ethics, and completing the Metro Rail system. During the Clinton administration, he served as a leading U.S. trade negotiator, ultimately earning the rank of ambassador. His new book is The Last Great Senate, Courage and Statesmanship in Times of Crisis. We're going to take a brief station break and back talking about a report in the journal Nature that says the demand for water outstrips supply globally.
Bruce Brodner!
Sit down, man.
Glenn Beck!
Sit down, man.
Rand Paul!
Sit down, man.
LL Cool J!
Sit down, man.
Netanyahu!
Sit down, man.
Sarah Palin!
Sit down, man.
Newt Gingrich!
Sit down, man.
Toby Keith!
Sit down, man.